I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio. Rag Radio comes your way every Friday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m. on Co-op 91.7 FM in Austin, Texas, a cooperatively run community radio station, all-volunteer radio station, and it's a very cool place. We had a wonderful time last week with the Melancholy Ramblers, didn't we, Tracy?
Yeah, that was fortunate to be able to have those folks here.
And they're always so cool and so much fun, and we have another special show today with the inimitable Jim Hightower. Jim?
Okay, I am here. Yeah. Great to be back with a Ragamuffin Rag Radio.
Yeah, well, we're ragamuffin along here. For those of you who don't know, Jim Hightower may be the country's most prominent progressive populist writer and radio commentator. He's a Rag Radio regular who's been on, I think this is your sixth visit, something like that. And Jim is also serving as a surrogate for Bernie Sanders, and it's extremely hectic things are. And you've been traveling around the country.
Yes, I have, and it's been great.
Okay, what we're going to talk about today is, well, one, we'll talk about we can't not talk about the presidential election.
Of course.
You know, on both sides.
Yeah.
And we also, Jim wrote an article in the Hightower Lowdown, but you have a wonderful article in this time about, I think that it's called Moral Obligations Lost in a Fog of Rhetoric, Reinventing Business Ethics, How Corporate Honchos Gave Themselves Cover to Be as Rapacious as They Want to Be. What a wonderful headline. There's not an article. That's the whole
thing. Yeah,
so. But anyway, we're going to talk about that. We may talk a little bit about the border wall farce, as you refer to it. It's going to be fun.
It's all beautiful.
It's all very, very cool. All right, Jim Hightower. Boy. What an election season. I mean, it's an election for all seasons, as it were. Things are crazy. They're fascinating on both sides, but it's like night and day. I mean, what the new hashtag for the Republican Party is, what, hashtag size matters?
Whoever thought that a race for president, not the president of Phi Kappa Bubba, you know, but the president of the United States of America would come down to, you know, wetting your pants and the size of your organs. So, I mean, it's just truly astonishing. You know, but I'll disagree a little bit, because on both sides, there is a similarity in a lot of the response. Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are drawing from the same pool of people, different perspectives, and in different ways. And, you know, Bernie makes the point, and I call him Bernie because everybody calls him Bernie to start with, and then he's also, I've known him for 30 years, but he makes the point that you can't ignore red areas of our country, red states, red districts, because there are working stiffs, dirt farmers, consumers, environmentalists, in all of those places. And they deserve to have a choice as well. And so he's been campaigning in such places. But he's also going into the hot centers of Liberty University. He went over there and got tremendous response from the kids. Alabama, here in Texas, going out because people do deserve to express themselves in a presidential election besides going with Donald Trump. But he believes that we need to tap into these people, be honest about people's anger. You know, there is anger, and there should be anger. I'm angry, you know, about what our economy is doing, about the plutocrats and autocrats, kleptocrats, really, who have seized control of our government with their money, and, of course, controlling our economy, knocking the middle class down and holding poor people down. So we have to be honest with them and to say to them that, you know, we have to build a movement that allows you to make your life better without making someone else's life worse. And that's a whole different appeal than what Trump and them are saying. But they're talking to the same pool of people.
Yes, when I said night and day, I'm really talking about the way the campaigns have been run.
Right.
And the incredible meltdown on the Republican side.
Marvelous.
It's wonderful.
It's just a,
in
I mean,
some
they,
ways.
To have to pull out Mitt Romney.
you know, and who would have ever thought that Republican debates on national or cable television that people would have to not let their children watch?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, yeah. Johnny, but this is adult material here.
And to see Chris.
But actually, it isn't adult material. It's schoolyard stuff. Here you go.
It is. That's exactly right. To see Chris Christie in the background with Donnie Trump, you know, just completely befuddled about where he was and what was going on here. And seven newspapers in New Jersey have called for his resignation, saying it's time to come home. You know, you've been gone. I forget how many days he's been gone in the last year. He's supposed to be governor of that state, you know, and doing something. They've got a $10 billion deficit in their budget. And Christie is despised even within his own party in New Jersey. But he's traveling with Donnie on Air Force Donnie, I guess, and getting out there and pitching what a great guy he is. Having trashed him just, you know, weeks ago.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, it just, and I think in this last debate, all of the candidates actually said that, yes, they would support Trump if he was a candidate. And that includes, people, Rubio and right. Cruz, and people who have said stuff about Trump that, what for one thing, will certainly be brought out in a general election.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah,
I mean, the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Oh, the hypocrisy. I mean, there's always, well, I mean, hypocrisy yeah. is not foreign to the political business.
Yeah, it's not rare in politics.
But, no, but it's been but taken it to a new level.
It is astonishing. And, you know, it's, you know, well, they all rally around, they say, but I doubt it. But the scariest thing to me is that there's this huge effort, different efforts actually, to stop Trump, either not to win the delegates to be able to be nominated in advance of the convention, or to do it at the convention to have another candidate step forward. That'll be a train wreck right there if they do that. But for them to try to stop Trump. And then they're saying, well, because then we can have either Rubio or Cruz or Kasich. Well, Cruz is far worse
or
than
Romney,
Trump.
Or Romney, yes. Yeah, Cruz is the worst.
Yeah, I mean, that's what scares me. I mean, Donnie Trump is a clown, in my view, and a TV act without a whole lot of weight. But he's got a mixed viewpoint. You know, he's not just a right-wing ideologue as Cruz is from the very start.
Although he's already jumping around like crazy. He just came out with his health care plan, and this is after he's said in the past that he supports a single payer.
Yeah.
And now he came out with this health care plan that will basically take everybody, you know, take away insurance from everybody who's gained it, the 20 million people who've gained it under Obamacare.
Well, and that includes Ted Cruz. his wife was a Goldman Sachs executive, vice president, and they had a policy worth $40,000 a year given to her by Goldman Sachs, but then she stepped away to work in the campaign, and so they lost that health care. And so Ted Cruz, shortly after having trashed Obamacare, I mean, like the day after, in his announcement speech to run for president, then went and signed up for Obamacare.
Right.
And, you know, Lily Tomlin says no matter how cynical you get, it's almost impossible to keep up.
it's a more cynicaler than thou kind of phenomenon. So, when you talk about the fact, and it's obviously a fact that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are appealing to, I don't know him well enough to call him Donnie, but that they are appealing to some of the same people. And in fact, there's the obvious, there have been folks who've given them as their 1-2 choice,
right.
But they're appealing in such incredibly different ways
right.
that I have trouble sometimes with the way people make the comparisons, because actually Trump has no policy or no consistent policy, no overview. And Bernie Sanders probably has the most consistent philosophy based policy and programs mm-hmm. of you know, anybody that's run in a long time.
Which he's had for 30 years, by the way. Yes. I mean, 30, 40 years, maybe, when he was mayor of Burlington, Vermont, and then in the House and then in the Senate. You can go back and look at his speeches back then, and it's exactly what he's saying today. Right. But the big difference between the two, and your point is correct, is Donnie Trump is saying, you've got problems, you've been screwed, so look down at those Muslims trying to come in here, look at those Central American kids trying to come in here, look at those Mexican Americans coming in here and taking your jobs, look down. And Bernie Sanders saying, look up, there's where the power is, they're the ones doing it to us, and we have to forge a real political movement that actually moves, and he's committed to that, even on the off chance that he doesn't get to the White House, that we will continue this thing and build and support candidates for local offices and Congress and et cetera, and build a real movement and keep expanding.
Well, if he doesn't even get close to the White House, he's still already made an incredible change in our political dialogue.
Yeah, he has put the issue of inequality and plutocracy, oligarchy, right on the front of our political agenda in America, and that is an astonishing achievement for those of us, including you, who've been talking about this thing for years and years and years. You know, now it has resonance because it's real. Yeah. People are experiencing,
and it's we have to also, by the way, give credit to the Occupy movement,
absolutely,
which first, you know, really brought a lot of this into the public consciousness, but Bernie Sanders, who's been, like you say, talking about it for decades,
but
brought it into the political scene.
Occupy, and then the Fight for 15, the fast food workers, who, you know, the least likely people to rebel, the low income, no job security at all, often not fully gripping the language, and they're the ones who have led the labor movement on this inequality issue with tremendous success. You know, we're doing $15 an hour in various states and cities.
And San Marcos, Texas.
Yep. Bingo. And then came Black Lives Matter, and you know, so it has been building, and this is the first time it's had a clear political expression.
Right,
because Obama captured a lot of that energy in 2008 and 12, but he didn't ride on this issue. He was a little tight with the Wall Street.
He was, and also it was impossible for him to do anything because the Republicans decided before he was ever even in the White House that they made their decisions. They met and decided nothing.
Mitch McConnell was then the minority leader of the Senate, McConnell out of Kentucky. And he said his number one priority was to keep Barack Obama from being a two-term president.
Yeah, but basically from doing anything at all. Yes, that was their first thing. It's just nothing passes. Nothing can happen. My concern about Trump, and I think maybe increasingly a lot of people's concern, is though he may be a clown and though he is a reality television star and a failed businessman in many ways and whatever, is that his appeal is so dark and that it's so reminiscent of some of like people like George Wallace, you know, who had that kind, you know, who appealed to that, to racism. You know, Trump may be the sweetest guy in the world, and he has told us that he's great for Mexicans, you know, and that everybody loves him no matter what they're. But what he's stirring up is, you know, and it's appealing to that same sort of disenfranchisement, to that same, you know, those same instincts, but he's certainly, but it's so dark.
Well, he's legitimizing a negative culture in our society, a very divisive culture. Now, that's not to say that everybody who's supporting Trump out of the working class are racist
xenophobes
and misogynists and all the rest of it, but it unleashes that.
Yes.
With him saying it, and by the way, when he began to say it, then Jeb Bush began to say it, and Chris Christie said it, and of course Ted Cruz was saying it all along, Rubio. They all said, "Got to build that big wall. Got to have that big wall. That wall. That wall."
Yeah, size matters.
I'm going to build a wall. I mean, to start with, you know, if that's your philosophy, we're going to build walls. I thought Pope Francis said that pretty well. You're supposed to build bridges, not walls. You know.
But
So there's a moral dimension of this election, and that's not a bad thing either. You know, that we face this, that this still is. That's what Black Lives Matter has been saying for quite a while, since they popped up, which is that this has not gone away.
Right.
This is still extant in our society, and we need to face it and address it. And now we're going to.
Okay, we need to take a break. We're talking with Jim Hightower, and it's already, I mean, I don't want to stop. You know, we don't want to lose our place. But it's such a crazy time, and it's a time that we have to address. Okay, Tracy Schultz, who is my engineer, Roger Baker, is also here taking pictures. And
we're going to go out with a little bit of the Melancholy Ramblers.
You've got to walk that lonesome valley. You've got to walk it by yourself. Nobody else can walk it for you. You've got to walk it by yourself. You've got to walk that lonesome valley. You've got to walk it by yourself. Nobody else can walk it for you. You've got to walk it by yourself. And Jesus walked that lonesome valley. He had to walk it by himself. Nobody else could walk it for him. He had to walk it by yourself. You've got to go and stand your trials. You've got to stand them by yourself. Nobody else can stand them for you. You've got to stand them by yourself. I've got to walk that lonesome valley. I've got to walk it by myself. Nobody else.
I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio. And that was the wonderful Frances Borton.
She's terrific. I've known her for 100 years since we worked together, Roger, too, at the Texas Observer, when I was editor back there. And, you know, we were talking about Bernie Sanders, whom I'm running around the country as a surrogate, working with him. And he has changed politics not only by his message of economic fairness and social justice, but also mechanically, because the standard line of the Democrats, my party, has been for decades now that, well, you know, we hate having to raise that big money, you know, but we can't just unilaterally disarm. So, yeah, we're going to have these super PACs and everything, and we're going to go to Wall Street, and we're going to do this and that. Well, Bernie has shown you don't have to do that. He doesn't have a super PAC. He will not allow one to be created. Right. He doesn't take corporate money. But he has raised more than $100 million now in average contribution of $27. Now, Thorne, you can't buy a president for $27.
It may have gone up to like 32 or something now, I think.
But you can buy a president who won't be bought
for
$27 or $32
dollars.
And that money keeps coming in. And that's the level that we're asking you to put in the same Democratic tradition to take power yourself. We don't need big corporate sponsors, because we can do this ourselves if we all do just a little bit each.
All right, Jim Hightower, tell me, we've been talking about the elections, and there's other things I want to talk about, but let's talk a little more, because it's just such a
huge.
Is this election season? Of course, it's set all kinds of new standards. I mean, certainly what Bernie Sanders has done, especially in raising money, in the way he's raised money, and raising so much money that has just blown everyone's mind that this has happened in the way it has. On the other hand, the Republican can't. I mean, they've reached new lows. I mean, I don't know in the history of this country. Now, there was a lot. There were a lot of brawling earlier in our history, but I don't think there's ever been anything, at least in modern times, that compares to this.
Oh, no.
And so on both sides, there's been dramatic. Do you think that this is changing? Because all of the bets are off. Trump, Trump has done stuff over and over and over again that people thought, well, no, this is too far. He can't get away with this, you know. And do you think it's changed the face of politics?
Yes,
this country?
Yes, I do.
Will there ever be an election that's the same? You
know? Not entirely. Because a couple of things. One, the candidates didn't create this. Mm-hmm. Bernie on the Democratic side and Trump on the Trump, Cruz, Rubio. To me, they're essentially the same. But they didn't create it. The people themselves have been boiling and roiling and stewing and ready. And they tried the Tea Party thing, and that was, you know, it hasn't worked out. They elect these Tea Party characters who say, you know, we're gonna do what you, we're gonna stand with you, there's the people. And then they go up there and they stand with the Koch brothers on vote after vote after vote. And so it's really a corporate front. Actually, the Tea Party was created by Dick Armey, the former congressman from up in Denton.
AstroTurf.
Yeah, yeah. So that didn't work. So they're looking for something that's real. I don't think Trump is real in terms of what he's promising, because he's all over the map. You know, you don't quite know what he would do. But that aside, they like the fact that he's just rearing back and popping them being the powers that be right in the snout. You know,
unfortunately, he's also demonizing whole classes of people.
Oh, absolutely, and that's the ugly side of it. But I'm talking about people who are not racist, misogynists, xenophobes, you know, and et cetera, but are just mad because the system has knocked them down and is holding their children down as well, their future. Their economic opportunities are disappearing in the country if you're not born rich. And then Bernie comes along with a whole other appeal going right at the rich and particularly the corporate elites, saying that inequality doesn't happen by accident. It happens because of decisions that are made in corporate boardrooms and congressional backrooms. They come up with these schemes like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That is a scheme to empower global corporations, multinational corporations, over our own sovereignty in this country and other countries as well. So it forces a whole new level of inequality over people around the globe. These things are manufactured by policies, private policies and public policies. And so Bernie's right in the face of that, and people know that that's true because they're experiencing it. Again, it used to be we talked about these things, and they were sort of theoretical because, you know, we always had poor people, and we're well practiced at holding down the poor. But now we've got the middle class being knocked down, and they're not used to it. And so they are a rebellious force. And beginning to unite with low-income people into coalitions that are making a difference. So that's a big difference that is not going to go away. The other difference is parties are becoming almost irrelevant. The Democratic Party, not quite yet, but the people who are in Bernie's campaign didn't come from the Democratic Party. I think he says something like 92% of the people in surveys they've done at these big rallies he has. We had 10,000 people here in Austin last Saturday. They've never been to a Democratic Party meeting. Right. And they are out there. They're organizing themselves. They had 17 hours notice here for Bernie was going to come to Austin to put on a rally. You got to have the stage, you got to have the security forces, you've got to have the fences, you've got to have this and that, and of course the microphones and all this set up, and we had more than 10,000 people show up. That was done by the internet, by social media, people communicating on their own. Yeah. So a Democratic Party could not organize a rally like that, and certainly the Republican Party can't. They get 40 people who are billionaires, and that's enough. You know.
But one thing we do have to acknowledge, and it's despite Bernie's background and his background in the civil rights movement, despite the fact that his philosophy, his policies, his addressing income inequality and Wall Street, that still the inroads that I think people had hoped would be made into especially the African-American community, that hasn't happened. It's happened to some extent, but it hasn't happened. And one of the reasons I think is because, especially in the South, African American community really does relate to the Democratic Party. and very much identifies with them, and that, you know, it's not just the fact that all the elected officials and whatever have supported Hillary right. Clinton.
Well, and they,
but how
and
is that? Well, go ahead.
Yeah, well, they relate particularly African-American voters to the Clintons and to Barack Obama.
Right.
And so you've got the phenomena of for 8 years, right. the first black president in America has been pounded on
right.
by the right wing.
Right.
And so understandably, liberals and African Americans and most thinking people are going to rally to the cause of Barack Obama because yeah. he's being pounded by bad people for all
Hillary
the wrong
Clinton
reasons.
Hillary Clinton has sort of tied herself.
Well,
to
she and Bill Clinton, you know, they've been well connected over the years. So that's all very legitimate. And I have no argument at all with that. But among young African-Americans, among Latinos, and we had a big crowd of Latinos out at this rally, and I've seen it around the country. In fact, he's been winning the vote in Nevada, for example. And among young women in particular, he won 84% of under 30 years of age in Iowa, and I think about the same in Nevada, and he was winning it in areas of Texas, the same thing.
Well, we know where the future lies.
Yeah, well, it's not you and me.
Well, no, that's true, too.
so that this is a big deal. And one other thing I'll say about that is that it just shows one campaign isn't going to get this done.
No,
don't all come together.
That's the important point.
Yes, exactly. And that's why Bernie's saying that we're going to keep this going. We're going to build a movement in this country that can indeed take power. They're very blunt about it. We want to be in power. We want to govern, and we being the people.
Right.
He wants to. He says, I can't do this. If I'm president of the United States, I can't beat Wall Street. But if I bring you inside, and I bring you inside the Congress as well as the administration and into the media, then we will carry these things through.
Yeah.
And again, it's going to take more than one campaign, more than one administration, but that's how
it's going to have to happen more than in just electoral politics.
Totally. And that's where it is happening now. It's
yes.
outside of electoral
yes.
politics,
yes.
Or at least where it is happening in politics has been mostly grassroots, local, and some state actions, but mostly local.
Oh, speaking of local.
Yes.
Speaking of local, of course, I believe that Travis County is the only county in Texas that actually went for Bernie Sanders. Am I correct about that?
I don't think so. I think there's some others.
Are there? Well, someone, I was told that. But but the wonderful Republican chair of Travis County, who's been, I mean, it's all over the place. He's an incredible conspiracy theorist tied to actually Trump. He co-authored a book with the Trump. And the tweets that he did during, about...
He has some fun views.
He does have some fun views, which involve Rick Perry's bisexuality
talking about the new Travis County GOP chairman.
Yes, who we're talking about. Yeah.
Yes,
who automatically ran the ire of his party, and they're trying to get them out of office.
But see,
already.
What we have to realize is that the Republican Party is reaping what it has sown.
Yes.
And that there's not that much difference between the, quote, moderates in the Republican Party and the far right. It's all been defined by the far right. And
absolutely.
The Republican Party has become an unmanageable entity.
Well, and one of the creators of the far right-wing Republican Congress is Paul Ryan, who's now the Speaker of the House from Wisconsin, and used to be considered a moderate, but has adopted the whole right-wing Tea Party litany. And he helped to create that. He worked with the Koch brothers of money and with Dick Armey and all these others to get these people elected to Congress. Goobers like... what's his name up there in Tyler area? Gomert.
Lee Gomert.
Yeah, and you got we had that guy down in southeast Texas who said that if babies had guns, they would not be aborted. I mean, this is the level of discourse. And now that's in presidential politics. But he helped foster that and create that so that they could take power, so that they could win the Congress. years in 2012 and 2014. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now he's stuck in it. He's got this Congress that he can't control. And he's just got a huge mess on his hands. And all that now is just boiling in the presidential race on the Republican side. Now that's coming back into the Congress as well. Right. So they have a heap of hurt.
Oh, they do. And one wonders if Trump, and it looks like Trump will be the nominee. I mean, who knows? I mean, there's still a lot of, you know, yeah. the press has already made the decisions about who's, right. you know. But yeah. Let's say he is the nominee. Will he even, and let's say he won. One of the things that people say is, well, you know, we know how to fight Ted Cruz. We know how to fight Marco Rubio. I mean, there's old game books, you know, game plans right. for doing that in politics. But Trump is such a loose cannon, right. you know, and you don't know. You don't, you know, who knows what could happen? I mean, one has to think that he would be easy prey because, I mean, that it's one thing to have 40% of the Republican Party, which is a minority party, right. And... You know, and I mean, there probably are some of those. I don't know. Yeah. But what if he does? What if he did win? Would he be able to govern?
No, but I don't know that he's even. He might hire somebody to do that.
Well, that's his whole thing, too.
Yeah, right.
I know people. Yeah, right. I have so people.
He can delegate. Know, he can farm out to other countries.
There you go. Yeah, right. Yeah. So, yes, he will. He will do some governing, but it'll be all over the place. He will not be. He's not an ideologue. His ideology is Trumpism. That's it. You know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So he'll have this view and that view, and none of it'll make any sense, and they'll contradict and et cetera. It'll frustrate his own constituency in a fairly short period of time, I think. But I also basically agree with what you were saying. I don't think he's going to get there, but to the White House. I mean, he may get to the nomination, but there's as you say, there's a lot between now and then.
Okay, when we get back, it's time for another break. Time just moves so fast when you're having fun.
It's amazing. That's good.
We're going to talk about the whole idea of what are corporations about? You know, is it about just maximizing the profit of the shareholders? Are there other things at play there that should be at play? Anyway, we'll talk about that because I think it's a fascinating article you wrote, and I want to talk. But first... we're going to take a break.
This 9-pound hammer, it's a little too heavy for my size, but for my size. Roll on, buddy.
Roll on, buddy.
Don't you roll so slow.
Don't you roll so slow.
How can I roll?
How can I roll?
When the wheels don't go.
When the wheels don't go.
Roll on, buddy.
Roll on, buddy.
All your load of coal.
All your load of coal.
How can I haul?
How can I haul?
When the wheels don't roll.
When the wheels don't go.
I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio. And my guest is the inimitable, the one and only Jim Hightower, and who's a famed progressive populist pundit, commentator, writer, former Texas Agriculture Commissioner, two-term, and is playing a major role in the Bernie Sanders campaign. And they're always calling him, and he's going out and being a surrogate. I love that term.
Yes.
I'm
gonna,
surrogate.
I'm going to put it on my tombstone.
Surrogate. Surrogate. Okay, so we've talked, and I know now people understand what's going on in politics in this country. It's all been made clear through our earlier discussion here. And so you guys have to thank us for that. Now I want to talk about what you have just written an article in the Hightower Lowdown. You're talking about, you said we're reinventing business ethics, and you're talking about the concept of shareholder hegemony. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a concept that is nothing but an ideological spontaneous combustion out of the corporate mind.
Okay.
It doesn't exist, in fact, anywhere.
Yeah.
But the notion is this. It is that that the corporate executives are required by morality and by law to put shareholders above all else in their decision making. So if you want to bust a union, if you want to pollute a lake, if you want to cheat consumers, defraud your own investors.
If you want to take your jobs offshore.
Yep. Or all of that. Anything you want to do, that you have to do that if it will put more money in the pockets of shareholders. And, of course, they don't give a damn about little shareholders. We're talking about the institutional shareholders, the richest of shareholders, and we're talking about the chief executives themselves and all the top executives. They're huge shareholders, and in fact, they've now attached their pay each year to whether their stock price increases. And if that stock price increases, that means shareholders do better. Therefore, this works to their direct advantage to put this thing out. And this has been touted as an absolute, and it only has come to the fore since 1970. Before that, there was a whole different attitude. I quote in here in the lowdown about this shareholder hegemony being a new phenomenon because in 1943, Robert Wood Johnson, who's the founder of Johnson & Johnson, the huge drug company and consumer outfit, consumer product outfit, penned a credo in which he designated five groups that the corporation was to serve. Number one were customers. Number two were workers. Number three were the managers. Fourth were communities. And shareholders were the fifth and last responsibility of the company. Listen to this quote from him. "We must be good citizens, support good works and charity, bear our fair share of taxes. We must maintain in good order the property we are privileged to use. We must participate in the promotion of civic improvement, health, education, and good government." That's not a corporation that I know today. Well, there are some.
There are a few.
Like Ben and Jerry, and you have some others that are out there, including some in this town, and certainly co-ops, and et cetera. But that credo was the standard of corporate managers until it began to come apart in 1970.
Okay, but I'm lost here because I thought that if we didn't regulate, you know, corporations, if we let them be free to truly engage in a free market economy and whatever, that they would do what's right.
Well,
and that the right would out through that process.
Well, they will.
Am I wrong?
They will do what's right by their definition of right, which is to serve the shareholders, which is to say themselves.
Okay,
by
wow.
By serving themselves, they are doing right, and they are doing good. Yeah. And we should be praising them, not condemning them, is their attitude. And it's kind of, you know, Michael Moore stated this once, that it is the duty of shareholders, of corporate executives to jack up shareholder prices at any cost to anyone else. Here's Al Franken in 2012, you know, a very good progressive friend of ours who got hornswoggled by this corporate claim. He said, "It is literally malfeasance for a corporation not to do everything it can to maximize its profits. That's a corporation's duty to its shareholders." Yeah. There's no law that says that.
No.
There's no corporate charter that says that. There's no state regulation that says that. There's nothing that says that except in the annual reports of the corporate executives that they put out. And yet the media has bought entirely into this, so much so that even, you know, an Al Franken and Michael Moore can get hornswoggled. And I'll be honest, I thought it was also an actual requirement until I began to dig into this, because they say this all the time. You can look at anything that's going on. I was just down in South Texas and on Padre Island, South Padre, and there's a company there called Glencore. It's the 10th largest corporation in the world. I never heard of it. It's a Swiss corporation. And they $200 billion a year or something that they take in. And they own an outfit called Sherwin Alumina, making aluminum down on Padre Island, aluminum products. And they tried to knock down the steel worker wages and benefits in 2014. And the workers rebelled, said no. And so Glencore, the parent, shut them out, locked them out. So we got a lockout for now more than 500 days These workers have been locked out of the factory, and they maintain a picket line right on the highway there. But they have to have that picket line in operation 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So for nearly a year and a half now, more than a year and a half, they've been out there for every hour of every day, standing firm, and have become, it raised their determination to stand against what was going to happen to them by the fact that this corporate power, this hegemony notion, is being used to abuse workers all around the world. And we got to take a stand somewhere. So these steel workers down there are taking this tremendous stand. I'm going to be writing about them and others. The Nabisco, now owned by a Mexican outfit that has paid his chief executive $180,000 in the last 8 years. They're moving Nabisco's plants in Chicago to Mexico. Those workers are going to drop completely out of the middle class. In Indiana, there's another steelworker fight over there. Carrier Air Conditioning, owned by United Technologies, is shutting down its plants. Called the workers together two and a half weeks ago, called them all together and said, goodbye, 2,000 workers, you know, we're going to Mexico. Goodbye and good luck. Adios, chump, pretty much is what they were saying there. So this is being done in the name of shareholders, but it is actually in the name of greed. Nothing kinder than that.
And the shareholders really, in general, don't have any policymaking power anyway. So the shareholders can't even say, no, don't do this for us. Do it for the betterment of society.
Yeah.
No, they can't even.
Shareholders have tried, in fact, to have a say in how much the CEO is paid. It's their corporation, you know, it's their money that funds this corporation. And they say, well, you're making too much money. You're taking too much of our shareholder money and putting it into something that's totally non-productive, which is your fat salary. Yeah. You know, you'd probably do the job for $1.5 million a year. So, but you want 10 million or 20 million or more. And so, but they have no right to do that. And when they have passed shareholder resolutions to say, we get to vote on the share on the CEO salary, it's an advisory opinion to the CEO. He does not have to take it at all.
I know you quoted in here. I love this quote. You quoted Herb Kelleher, former CEO of Southwest Airlines, saying, "Your employees come first. And if you treat your employees right, guess what? Your customers come back. And that makes your shareholders happy. Start with employees, and the rest follows from that." Blasphemy!
Bingo. Well, he was a blasphemous guy. I knew him. And he was originally the lawyer for Southwest Airlines when it first got started, out of San Antonio. And then he was irreverent across the board, pretty much. Okay. But he's a guy who laughed a lot, but was absolutely committed to principles like he just enunciated there.
There's that idea that do good and okay, That's I think, a very, and people can read that article that we were just talking about in the Hightower Lowdown. Quickly, because we're just down to a couple of minutes. You also wrote something recently, and it was a shorter piece about the GOP's fence fantasy. And I just want to know, I mean, wait, you mean, you don't think, for one thing, Mexico won't pay for that? You don't think? I mean, why can't we make Mexico pay for it? That just doesn't seem fair.
Because they're a sovereign nation.
Oh, I see.
And they don't want to pay for it.
Okay, gotcha.
So it's like your neighbor would.
But we can't squeeze them.
Would put an 18-foot high fence in front of you and block your view and everything, so that your neighbor doesn't have to look at you, and can keep you out of his or her yard. So, and then want to bill you for it. I'm guessing you would say no.
You refer to Trump, Cruz, and Rubio as just build a wall simpletons. So, I love it.
Yeah, of course, it will achieve nothing. We've got a wall to start with.
Right.
And even Trump says, well, we don't need a wall going across the whole span there of a couple thousand miles because there are certain areas that are wetlands and so desert and stuff and rugged mountains. And so, you know, but the... So we're going to have pieces of wall, which is what we have now.
Which is what we already have.
Actually, it comes down in I think it's Brownsville or Harlingen. It the wall comes together, comes from the point of Texas and the Gulf Coast, and comes up a little ways, and then there's a golf course, a private golf course. There's no wall at the golf course, so all you got to do is dress up in caddy clothes and
make it
outside.
Working on the greens. But it's fun because what you talk about how this is ludicrous on basically every level. It would be too expensive to do. It would be it makes no sense, no sense whatsoever. And I think that's something people realize. Okay, we're give us in about 30 seconds, give us something positive to grab a hold of.
Well, it's up to us, and it being whether we're going to allow the plutocrats to control everything, or we the people are going to become sovereign again. And that's very much in question, and that's the importance of this election this year, and the election next year, and the next year, and the next year,
right.
Because we the people have got to build this movement that is inclusive and that is diverse in terms of the issues that it focuses on, but goes head-on at the kleptocratic corporate powers that are ruling over us now.
Jim Hightower, one more time, thank you so much for being with us here on Rag Radio.
Thank you. I appreciate Rag Radio.
Lots of fun. Okay, thank you so much, everybody, for being with us and for helping us out. I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio.